From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Welcome to The Doctor Is In. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Joel, we're going to do something kind of unusual for this podcast.
Unusual?
Well, yeah. We get a lot of questions that come in to the doctor at ARRL.org. Let's answer some of them right here in the podcast. Let's make it a listener mailbag.
How about that?
Sounds good. Well, let me reach in here and see what I've got. Got one here from Larry, AA8QS, and he's asking, I just received a copy of Get on the Air with HF Digital. That's my book. Thank you, Larry. I'm enjoying reading it, but I found what I believe to be a technical error in a discussion of audio frequency shift keying, otherwise known as AFSK, and traditional frequency shift keying, FSK. The author, that's me, states, quote, after all, regardless of whether you're using AFSK or FSK, the RF signal frequencies at the output are still shifting back and forth, thus it is still frequency shift keying in either case. I believe that in the case of AFSK, audio frequency shift keying, the audio frequency shifting that modulates the RF carrier in the case of SSB modulation does not shift the radio frequency at the radio's output. Am I correct or am I missing something? Am I incorrect, Joel? Did I make an error?
Absolutely not, Steve.
I didn't think so.
Not possible. Okay, this can be confusing because it can be looked at in a number of different ways. So let's get a little bit of discussion about what's happening here, especially for people that don't do teletype, might not be accustomed to this. With Morse code, we typically traditionally transmit it by on-off keying of a single carrier. If the key is down, the carrier's there. If the key is up, there's nothing there. Morse is made up of variable length elements that translate into letters, as we know. Teletype is a little different. It's teletype character, is transmitted as a code group of five equal length pulses, one such group per character. If you think about it, 2^5 is 32. So you could do all the letters that way, although there's no provision in teletype for upper and lower case particularly. And then there's a character that says shift from letters to what traditionally is called figures, which include numbers and punctuation, that sort of thing. And then there's a character that shifts back from that to go back into letters. So that's how it basically works. And there's no reason that couldn't be sent with on-off keying also. In fact, I think that at first it was actually done that way. That's where the idea of mark and space came from, which we don't need to get into, but just you'll hear it referred to that way. The mark is when there's line current, and the space is when there's not line current, traditionally, if you have an on-off system. But they decided many years ago that they could be more accurate in decoding teletype if instead of having on-off keying, they had a plus current during the time when the pulse is there and a negative current when the pulse is not there. So it shifts back and forth between positive direction current and negative direction current. That works on sort of wireline teletype, which is what it was used for first. And they had better accuracy of transmission by doing it that way. Now, in the radio world, they've pretty much followed that. But instead of using current, of course, which you can't send over the air, what they do is they use two frequencies. One frequency corresponds to the mark. The other frequency corresponds to the space. When the code is not being transmitted, there's nothing there. When there's a mark, either the higher or the lower frequency is sent, and vice versa when there's a space. And if you listen to it, you can hear it go back and forth in that way. It's shift of a few hundred hertz usually. There are a number of different standards. You probably know them.
170 hertz in the case of
amateur.
Yeah, amateur radio.
But there's nothing magic about that, except if you want to have the other station detect you with their equipment, you probably ought to use the standard spacing.
Mm-hmm.
And tune it properly. So in the old days, back when transmitters were simple, you had a transmitter that was designed for radio telegraph, and you put the key down, it sent out a single frequency. To make it send teletype, what people did was they'd have a relay or something that caused a, let's say, a capacitor to go across the coil of the variable frequency oscillator and shift the frequency when it was a mark and let it go back to the regular frequency when it was a space. And that was called frequency shift keying. And that was just fine until we get to the current time when most people use computer sound cards to generate and detect radio teletype and other digital modes. And with a single sideband transmitter, what they do is they put those tones into the single sideband audio system, and when it comes out the other end, it comes out as two radio frequencies separated by this difference between the two audio tones. To anybody looking at it on the air, it looks exactly the same as the old my old Viking 2 with a relay in the back changing its frequency. So it is frequency shift keying. It's just generated internally in a different way. Interesting, there was actually CW was done that way at one point. If everybody remembers the Collins KWM2, which is one of the first popular sideband transceivers, they designed it as a sideband transceiver, and at the last moment somebody said, oh, suppose we want to send CW with this. Well, the way they did it is they put a tone in the carrier, and they keyed the tone, and that put out a single frequency. Nobody could tell the difference, except it was a little bit different frequency for most people. But anyway, the point is, what comes out the end of the radio is what determines what the modulation is. And if it's a pair of signals going back and forth in frequency, it's frequency shift keying. In the old days, the audio frequency shift keying used to be used also on, let's say, 2-meter AM, because most 2-meter rigs in those days were not stable enough to do frequency shift keying. By using audio frequency shift keying on an AM transmitter, you actually got a modulated frequency shift keying kind of thing. CW sometimes was sent the same way, and that worked quite well, but that's a very different thing. It's much wider bandwidth. It has a carrier. It has two sidebands, or in the case of FSK, four sidebands.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, four signals in the sideband. So it's a whole different arrangement, and that requires a different part of the spectrum allocation. You're not allowed to send that in the digital and CW portion of the bands. But if you send it over a single sideband transmitter, you get exactly what you'd get by frequency shift keying a VFO or doing on-off keying in the case of Morse. So I have to go with Steve on this one. It is the same mode as straight frequency shift keying. It's just generated in a slightly different way.
And they're indistinguishable on the air. You can have somebody running traditional FSK on RIDI, and then somebody else with properly modulated AFSK, and you can't tell the difference between the two.
That's true, but I guess we should focus a little more on the word properly modulated.
Yes.
Because this assumes that the sideband transmitter has adequate carrier suppression and sideband suppression. If you have a misadjusted or overdriven sideband transmitter, you can easily get spurious signals that probably wouldn't happen in a traditional FSK arrangement. So you have to make sure you're not overdriving anything. Same can happen if you drive a linear amplifier with the, you know, you can get strange harmonics.
Oh, yeah.
You can get all kinds of things happening. As with any kind of signal, you have to adjust it properly and make sure that you're transmitting what you think you're transmitting.
Well, thank you for vindicating my book, Joel.
My pleasure. I'll take a cut of that.
Well, let's hear from DX Engineering, and we'll be right back.
Remember your first contact? The excitement of that first CQ? The exhilaration of making your first QSO? At DX Engineering, we know that feeling too. That's why we've committed to making your on-air experience the very best it can be. DX Engineering ships quickly, which means less station downtime, and we have free shipping for almost any order over $99. We've recently expanded our inventory, so you don't have to wait for the gear you need. DX Engineering has introduced all new radio products and revived legendary brands, all with the goal of helping you enjoy amateur radio. Most importantly, the DX Engineering team is here to help you. You've got a team of highly experienced hams ready to work out technical issues, answer questions, and help you optimize your station performance. That excitement you felt from the first contact, it can happen again and again with help from DX Engineering. DXEngineering.com. That's DXEngineering.com.
And we're back, Joel, for another question.
All right.
This one's from Michael, KF6FJD. And he's asking, I've been trying to get anyone to call me back on HF for the last couple of weeks. This sounds like me. I've gone portable on mountaintops as well as using my home station, and I've had no luck at all. I've had my radio checked out and everything is fine. My antenna is a brand new commercial multiband dipole, but still nothing. The only thing I can think of is power. Is 100 watts enough power to use under these poor band conditions? What's wrong, Joel?
Well, that's a good question, and this can be very frustrating for a new ham, I'm sure.
Yes.
There's so many things that could be happening here, and I guess it's probably not the power. 100 watts is probably the most frequently used power by hams on HF. There are some exceptions. You know, anything from 5 watts or 1 watt to 1,500 watts can be found, but I'd say the majority of hams run at 100 watts. You run at 100 watts, right?
Yeah, 100 watts.
Yeah. Now, I will admit I run typically at 500 watts if I need to, but of course on 30 meters I run 200 watts, and it should work fine. So, you know, what's happening here? Well, with our low sunspot numbers we've been having, the propagation conditions on the higher frequency bands are not as good as we are used to.
But yeah, he doesn't mention what bands he's using.
Right.
So that could be key.
That's a key thing. But even, you know, as I was mentioning earlier, I worked a new country in the Pacific over the weekend on 15 meters. So, you know, it's not dead. It's just not open as often to as many places, maybe. But there could be a lot of things going on here. You know, one of the things that could be happening is you might have a control misset on your radio. For example, if you have the receive incremental tuning or transmit incremental tuning turned on and adjusted someplace, that means that you're transmitting and receiving on two different frequencies. So it may be when you call CQ, somebody's actually calling you back on that from the frequency you're transmitting on, but because you're not listening there, you're not hearing them. Another possibility is that some transceivers have a transmit disable function that can keep it from transmitting at all. So I guess I'd go through the manual very carefully and make sure you have everything set the way that's supposed to be. And then when you transmit, make sure that you're getting all the indications you should get. In other words, typically you'll see the transmit power going up as you speak. If it has an ALC indicator, you should probably see some level of swing in the ALC range, and the manual should tell you that. And if you have things cranked up too far, so your power is up all the time, people might not come back to you because your audio sounds so crummy they can't understand you. So you have to be careful you're not hitting it too hard in some way. Most instruction manuals give you very explicit instructions on how to talk into the mic and how to adjust things for the proper indications. As far as your antenna, make sure the standing wave ratio is in the proper range, typically less than 1.5 or 2:1 on the frequency you're using.
He doesn't mention what sort of antenna he's using here either.
Well, he says it's a commercial dipole, but, you know, did
multi-band, single-band?
Well, it says, yeah. He said a commercial multi-band dipole. Actually, he mentioned a brand name, but I didn't think that was pertinent, so I didn't mention it.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it should work. If it works, it works.
Okay.
And, you know, as we know, you can make almost anything radiate. I guess one thing I'd say is, in my experience, you'd be much more successful answering a CQ than calling CQ.
Yes.
Because, well, there are a lot of reasons for that, but so I would do that. Another thing, you know, get out there when there are a lot of people calling CQ. And when is that? Well, look in your contest calendar and find out when some nearby state's QSO party is going on. And you will find the band full of people calling CQ, New England QSO party, or whatever they're talking about. And that's a great time to make contacts because you can get a large sample of contacts. All of those people are looking to talk to you. They want to make a contact. They aren't looking for somebody far away. They're just looking for somebody to talk to make a note in their log. And you can work multiple people that way. And I think that's, you know, that should work. Now, if that doesn't work, there's something strange going on. And what you need to do is find somebody to talk to on a prearranged basis who can help you understand what's happening. You need to have somebody nearby, perhaps a club member. If you have a local club, that's a good way to start. If not, you need to be aware of the online registry of licensed hams, which you can look at qrz.com. You can put in somebody's call letters, which is often useful if you're talking to somebody. But in your case, what you want to do is find somebody nearby. So you can, instead of call sign, you can put in address instead. You could search on the city name or the and of course, the city name. There'll probably be some cities with the same name in Australia. That's not going to help, but you got to look carefully for ones that are near you. I often use the zip code, which helps. I did happen to check on your zip code, and for some reason, even though there are 263 hams in your town, I noticed, you are the only one in your zip code. That's very unusual. So don't use your zip code, but anybody else out there might want to do that. Find somebody, and then while you're in there, instead of just looking at the first page that comes up with their basic information, look at the details tab, and that'll tell you what class license they have. You want to work on HF, you want somebody with a general or an extra class or advanced class license. Pick on the bio tab, and most active hams have updated the bio to include typically a picture of them and some information about their station. If there isn't anything there, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it might mean they're not a very active ham, and that might not be a fruitful avenue. So find somebody that looks like they're active and find their phone number and give them a call. And see, ask them if they can explain your situation. Ask them if they can meet you on whatever band you think works well or whatever the band works for them. And hopefully you'll get an idea of what's happening. He can come back and say immediately, oh, well, you're not modulating properly or you're on the wrong sideband. Well, that's another thing. If you call,
Yes.
You have to be on, to talk to somebody most of the time, you want to be on lower sideband on 160, 80, and 40 meters, upper sideband on 60, 20, 15, 17, 12, and 10 meters.
And we discussed once why that was the case. We don't need to get into it now,
no.
But yes.
Yeah, there actually was kind of a reason for it, and that at some points there were equipment was only made one way or the other. It was not, you didn't have a choice. But nowadays, most transceivers, you have the opportunity to set that wrong. It's not exactly wrong. It's not illegal.
No.
But people can't understand you unless they realize what's happening. That's another kind of thing. But there's something funny going on here, and you probably, you know, once you find out, you'll give yourself a whack in the head and say, oh my God, why didn't I think of that? But once you've got it, you've got it. And I think that's where you need to start. So find somebody who can help you. And if you don't get anywhere with that, send me another email. We'll see what we can do.
Well, speaking of emails, we have our last question here. And okay. This comes from Ken, W8LTT. And he's asking, I would like to learn more about the best practices for tuning up at a spot on a band for different modes. For example, I didn't realize that just keying the transmitter on SSB didn't produce a tunable signal. I haven't found this covered in any of my references. Well, I can answer this, Joel. No, really, all he has to do on single sideband is, you know, get into the proper frequency and then holding the mic at the correct distance from his lips, say, hola, hola. I mean, isn't...
Well, that will put out a signal. Now, the only downside of that is chances are it won't be a steady signal. So if you're trying to adjust an antenna tuner, it may make it tricky to to null the SWR. But that certainly can work, and that's a good point. I guess what I was thinking was you may not want to do that.
Something not as irritating, I would imagine you're about to suggest, right?
Well, I was gonna suggest what he thought he was doing, which was putting out a steady carrier. And the issue with single sideband, of course, is a single sideband signal is short for single sideband suppressed carrier. So if you're not talking...
So there is no carrier.
There is no carrier. What you want is a carrier. Now, how can you do that? Well, one easy way is if your transmitter supports AM mode, and I should go back a step and say, you not only want to put out a carrier, if you're going to adjust an antenna tuner or do anything else, you probably want to put out a carrier at a lower than full power level. Like typically antenna tuners like to be adjusted at perhaps 10% of the full power or something. But an AM signal, if you have a transceiver that sends AM, if you put it on AM mode and hit your push-to-talk button and don't speak into the mic, you will put out a carrier at about 25% of the full power level, which is maybe a little high for some tuners, but probably will work okay. And that'll put out a steady carrier. The only caveat about that is, of course, it is AM. And if you don't speak into the mic or your cat doesn't meow from behind you, it'll just be a steady carrier. But if there's any noise in the room, it's going to be modulated. So, you know, that's probably a reasonable thing to do on the voice bands, but I wouldn't do that on the CW band particularly unless you're sure that there's not going to be any noises going on. But that will work. Another thing you can do is some radios have a tune position. This is probably a better way if your radio has it. If you push the tune button, it will transmit a carrier at a lower level, 5 or 10 watts, just for that purpose. Now, unfortunately, some radios that have a tune button have that dedicated to operating with a specifically designed antenna tuner that will be triggered when you push that button, and they won't do anything else if that antenna tuner is not connected to that radio. That can be worked around in some ways, but it's not trivial usually. But if you have a tune button that works, that's great. Another thing you can do, you can use CW in any part of the band that you're allowed to operate in. You probably don't want to hit the key with full power if you're adjusting an antenna tuner, but if you reduce the power down to 10 watts and use CW, hit your key, and if you don't have a key, get a key. I think every ham station should have a key.
Everybody should have a key.
Now, not everybody agrees with me about that, but and oftentimes there's other ways. It doesn't take much. Even any kind of a switch plugged into the key jack will cause it to do that, or a push button from stolen from your door, front door, will also work. Send out a carrier, and then when you have everything tuned, remember to bring the carrier level back up before you transmit. Now, before you do any of these things, make sure there's nobody talking on that frequency. If you want to join a net of a bunch of people that are talking and you want to tune up your antenna tuner, what you do not want to do is tune up while you're on the frequency of the net, because you will make everybody mad, and it's also illegal to do that.
Or tune up on the DX stations, transmitting frequency,
yes.
Like Mellish Reef with a loud carrier in the background.
Oh, did you
constantly
hear me when I got the wrong button pushed?
Well.
I spent so much time writing and stuff that I don't get on the air as often as I should. And I always, every time I do that, I have to go back through and remember all the buttons I have to push to end up on split frequency mode. And invariably, I have both, you know, I've got two receivers, so I have the right receiver in each ear and I everything going, but I'm not, didn't remember to hit the split button at the first time. But anyway.
That's when you get people cursing at you.
Yes.
Or on CW sending lid, up,
yes.
Up, or...
Yes, exactly. Yes. And then nobody can hear the DX station. So I try to avoid that, but it's not always successful, I have to confess. But still, if you have, if you want to check in with the net, tune your radio a couple kilohertz above or below the frequency the net's on to where nobody is talking, if you can find such a place. And if you're within even 8, 10, 15 kilohertz usually, if you're adjusting an antenna tuner, when you go back on net frequency, it'll be close enough usually to work just fine. And then the people will actually talk to you on the net rather than just cursing at you.
That's right. And of course, always identify when you
yes,
are
absolutely right.
Tuning and transmitting. And
absolutely right.
Excellent. Well, Joel, that was a very good mailbag. We should do this again.
Okay.
We should. And Becky mentions this on the outro to our podcast, but it deserves mentioning again. Joel loves answering questions, so just email them to doctor@arrl.org.
I'll be here.
All right. Thank you.
My pleasure.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.